We're looking closely at hope and how it influences a life. It is The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. WPR's national program, To the Best of Our Knowledge, is exploring hope in a three-part series that starts later this month. And together, we're digging in and learning about all the facets of hope and hopelessness. You can listen, learn more at ttbook.org. One of the many people we'll hear on this journey to better understand hope is MIT neuroscientist Tali Sharot.
So hope is what you want to happen. Optimism is the belief that what you want to happen will happen.
Do you feel hopeful? What gives you that hope? Is it your family? Is it learning new things, your travels? Share your experience, your encounters with hope at 800-642-1234. Phelan Kesseber is an assistant scientist at the Center for Healthy Minds at UW-Madison. She is a social psychologist and studies happiness and virtue. Phelan, welcome to the Ideas Network.
Thank you very much.
So help us understand, in a nutshell here, what is hope? Is it an idea? Is it a characteristic? Is it something of both?
Well, when psychologists think about hope, for the most time, they think about it as both a belief and also a motivation and emotion. Ultimately, we can say that hope is the expectancy that desirable future outcomes are likely. And oftentimes, this is accompanied by emotions of yearning, desiring. A belief combined with desire. That's what we can say hope is.
Can hope have a little bit of different meaning for every single person on this planet?
It might, absolutely, yeah. Definitely. Yeah. But I guess still underlying all those different meanings would be, again, the belief that things can improve. The future is going to be better than now. Yep.
You're a social psychologist. You study personality. Mm-hmm. You study well-being. What are these individual traits, these characteristics that you see so frequently that are related to hope?
Yeah, that's a great question. Hope oftentimes is related to a constellation of personality characteristics, which we may perhaps call generally positivity. Because when you look at hope, what it is ultimately is a positive approach towards the future, but also towards yourself, the belief that you can make good things happen, but also a positive approach towards the universe or a higher power, if you are a believer, and probably also a greater positive approach towards others, trusting them that they will help you achieve these goals. Hopeful people, they possess qualities such as optimism, but also self-esteem, meaning, all these desirable qualities. And that's why hope is very strongly related to well-being. That's something we know very well.
We're talking with social psychologist Phelan Kesseber. She is our guide as we explore the concept of hope this hour and where it comes from. What about life or the future that gives you hope, or perhaps the opposite of hope? Have you made a conscious choice to be hopeful? What advice would you share with others? You can join in at 800-642-1234. You can email ideas at WPR.org. Phelan, what factors contribute to whether a person is hopeful or hopeless?
So as with any personality characteristic, there is a heritability component to hope and, again, in general, to positivity. So definitely some of us are born with a higher likelihood of feeling optimistic and hopeful and positive. And that probably accounts for maybe, like, say, 30 to 50% of hope differences between people. But also, understandably, the environmental factors and whether hope is something that's in our social networks and in our society, in the culture, that has a lot of influence on hope and might even have a greater influence. And also personal experiences, what we have experienced in the past, especially have we learned that we can make a difference with our own actions. That also makes a difference.
When I hear you use the word hope and the word optimism mm-hmm. almost in the same sentence, mm-hmm. Are they very close in meaning?
They are. In psychology, some psychologists, they define them in different ways and they measure them in different ways. But still, they find that they are very much related. And in lay language, too, we use them in very similar ways. So we can differentiate them in some ways. But at the end of the day, they overlap substantially.
Well, let's look in the human body. What parts do genetics have to play into how hopeful we are as a person?
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Well, genetics, what they mostly determine is how likely we are to experience positive emotions, for example, and how likely we are to experience negative emotions. And if we are more likely to experience positive emotions, that translates into a more hopeful outlook in life in general. And also if we are wired to bounce back faster from negative emotions, that also translates to maintaining hope. But we should really realize that genetic influences, they are important, but they definitely can be overridden. Hope is a skill that can be learned. All of us can become more hopeful, even if maybe our genetic lottery wasn't cast.
Genetics don't have the whole story here
definitely,
on hope.
Absolutely.
Mm-hmm. How much does our environment around us and the people who are around us affect our ability to have hope?
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Well, a lot, because we are a social species, and emotions and also cognitions, they are contagious. So if we are surrounded by people who have a hopeful outlook, who are inspired, who have a vision, that definitely has an uplifting effect on us. And on the flip side, of course, if we are surrounded with people who exude dejection or depression or hopelessness, that definitely puts us down emotionally too. That's why it is really important to surround ourselves with people who have this hopeful outlook and lift us up. We all need that.
What about the world as a whole? How does society and culture and the time period we live in mm-hmm. impact mm-hmm. our level mm-hmm. of hope?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Well, you know, like there has been no historical time or no geographical place probably where people didn't feel a lot of hopelessness, but also a lot of hope. Because things have never been perfect anywhere in the world at no historical time. But there were people who still felt hope, and it's because of those people that we are currently experiencing the level of civilization and the progress that we do. And currently, I guess it's possible to say that many of us feel hopeless, for example, reading the news, and it just makes us feel almost overwhelmed and hopeless. But
we can get to that point here in just a moment, talking with Palin Kesseber mm-hmm. about hope, getting your personal experiences, your insights along the way at 800-642-1234. We'll continue this in just a moment on the Ideas Network. We're talking about hope and what it means here on The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. Our producer colleagues, to the best of our knowledge, have been asking dozens of people about what hope means. Here is aerospace engineer Robert Zubrin, who advocates for space exploration as a way to help society.
I think hope is essential. Despair is the worst of sins. Of what use is courage if the situation is hopeless? Of what use is wisdom if the situation is hopeless? Of what use is love if the situation is hopeless?
Do you feel hopeful? What is the source of your hope? Do you have the ability to spread hope to people around you? Was there a time when your world crumbled and you felt all hope left you? We're at 800-642-1234, email ideas at WPR.org. Social psychologist Palin Kesseberstay is with us from UW-Madison's Center for Healthy Minds. Palin, in the last few years, we've heard a lot about how people are more at odds with each other than ever before. We're polarized, we're anxious, we're depressed. Is our world a bit more hopeless right now?
Well, subjectively, that might be people's perception. I believe a lot of people feel that way. But I also believe as humans, we have the tendency to believe that whatever we are going through, that's the worst. Like right now is like the worst that things have been. But objectively, it really doesn't seem to be that way. There have been a number of scholars recently who have showed evidence that actually the historical time in which we are living is substantially better than previous periods. Steven Pinker, he wrote Enlightenment Now, or the late statistician Hans Rosling, he has written a book where he talks about all these things that have improved in the world, and these are major things, like literacy rates have increased so much, or women's rights, or child labor has decreased, or fewer people die from natural disasters. I mean, there are all these things which we have statistical evidence that things are actually getting better, but that's not how we feel, right? There is this gap between how things objectively are and how we feel. And I believe it's really important to have that perspective and to realize, yes, absolutely, there's a lot of negativity around and there are lots of problems that need to be fixed, but we also have to have the bigger picture, which is things are actually going good, right? Mm.
Well, let's bring in a call now. Let's go to Dan joining us from Drummond. Good morning, Dan.
Good morning. Well, what I was going to say was that the times that I've been hopeless in my life were the times when my mother passed away and I had two good friends that passed away in that. But then the hope comes in when I am able to go visit with the people where I live in that. Like one lady has a dachshund that loves to clean my face. And I got, another lady that has a cat that just loves watching PBS. So these are things that are in everyday life. I have one old gentleman that I visit. He's in his 80s, and one of the things that I did, I have one of those tablets, and one of the websites that I downloaded was Spotify, and it has all the music that I love, which is of his time period. Mm. So I bring a lot of pleasure to people by just visiting.
Dan, thank you so much for your call. And it sounds like he has found ways to find hope.
Absolutely. And he underlines the importance of others. Like all of us, we have the responsibility to keep up our hopes, but also instill hope in others. And, you know, we can do that by just being kind and generous to others. That's one of the main things that gives people hope, just being kind and generous.
Let's go to Barb now, joining us from Green Bay. Hi, Barb.
Hello. I was just excited to hear your program because I think hope is so important. And I found that out in my life in the past when I lost everything I thought was important. But I discovered that everything I really needed was inside myself. And I chose hope. And the ability to change my perspective on the way I look at things, I just can't stress how powerful that is for people. And one of the things that helped me initially was just looking at nature, and the beauty of the night sky never changes. The trees are budding right now, believe it or not, even with the snow coming. And I just think that hope is so important. I'm a grandparent. And if we as grandparents, if we don't have hope, what kind of gift are we giving our grandchildren? We have to maintain that. I lecture my friends about it when they get so down about the world, because that's the best gift we can give to the future, is to have hope for it and maintain hope, Barb, for our grandchildren.
Yeah, Barb, thank you so much for your thoughts on hope. And Palin, it sounds too like an older generation needs to have that hope for the younger generation, the grandchildren.
Very true, very true. And in general, for young people, it is so important to see models of hope and optimism. For a parent, for example, one of the best gifts that they can give to their children is modeling optimism and hope, especially in the face of struggles or troubles, the ability to bounce back, and the belief that something better is going to turn up. Yeah.
We're talking about hope with social psychologist Palin Kesseber, and you can join in the conversation at 800-642-1234. Do you feel hopeful right now? What gives you that hope? Are you not very hopeful, and why is that? How does the news cycle and dire situations perhaps you focus on affect your ability to have hope? You can call in, email ideas at WPR.org. Palin, the factors in life that we're often so focused on, getting a better job, getting a better house, a better car, all of these material things, do those lifestyle improvements, so to speak, increase our happiness, our optimism, our hopefulness?
Yeah. Well, what the data shows is the effect they have on their happiness is much less than what people normally believe. Typically, in research conducted in the developed world, the differences in external circumstances, such as how much money you make, or do you live in a big house, or what's your job, those account for maybe 10 to 15% of happiness differences between people. And a lot of people are surprised by that. But we all know of people who are rich and who might have a lot of things that others desire, but they are miserable, where there might be people who do not have much, but they are peaceful and they are happy. So what research shows us is happiness has much more to do with how we see the world and how we respond to the world than what we have. And when we talk about the way we see the world and the way we respond to the world influencing our happiness, hope is a big part of that. People who have a hopeful outlook, they see the world through some positive lenses, and whatever happens to them, they have the ability to turn it into something better, and that contributes to happiness a lot.
So is it possible to treat hope like a skill? Can we get better at hope? How do you do that?
We absolutely can. One of the main things that we need to work on if we want to develop our hope skill is improve our attention skills, and especially pay attention to what we pay attention to. So what we pay attention to determines our reality. So if we focus a lot of our attention on the negative stuff that's happening, and especially on stuff over which we do not have much control, that is going to deplete our hope resources. On the contrary, if we focus our attention on the positive stuff that's happening in the world or in our life, and also on stuff over which we have control, that is going to turn us into a more hopeful person. One way, for example, in which we can train our ability to pay attention to good things is practicing our skill of gratitude. In recent years, there have been many studies which show the power of gratitude. For example, you can keep a gratitude journal, or with your family, each night at dinner, you can talk about the good things that happened to you. All of these work in improving your well-being because they train your brain to scan for the good things that are happening, whereas our brains, oftentimes, we are programmed to scan the environment for the bad stuff just for evolutionary reasons.
We're looking at hope and how it impacts our lives, what happens when hope is absent. Palin Kesseber stays with us through the hour. She's an assistant scientist for the Center for Healthy Minds at UW-Madison. Do you feel hopeful? What gives you hope? Is it your family? Is it learning new things, perhaps traveling? Share your experience with us at 800-642-1234. We'll carry on this conversation about hope and what happens when we perhaps have too much. That's coming up right after a news update here on the Ideas Network. We're exploring hope here on The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent, and we're looking at hope with the help of our colleagues at the WPR National Program, To the Best of Our Knowledge. They interviewed more than a dozen people as part of a forthcoming series on hope, including activist and hip-hop artist Common.
My hope and optimism also sees what's blossoming out of these, like, hard times.
Are you not very hopeful right now? Why? Parents, do your children give you hope? What do you hope for them? Or maybe you're nervous for the future they'll live in. Share with us at 800-642-1234. Tweet us at WPR Mornings. Social psychologist Palin Kesseber is our guide on hope. She studies happiness and virtue at the Center for Healthy Minds at UW-Madison. Let's go back to the phones now with Robert joining us from Cumberland. Good morning, Robert.
Good morning.
What gives you hope?
Well, I'd say taking myself out of the equation, in my lifetime, I've seen the people that have the most hope having and being the most optimistic, positive looking tend to have belief in a higher power in their life and that there's a point and a purpose to life as compared to people that lack that value, or not value, but foundation of maybe a higher power, tend to have more of a nihilistic viewpoint on what's going on around them and tend to be more pessimistic and less positive thinking.
So you really see the spiritual side of hope having an influence from spiritual?
Beliefs, yes.
Spiritual beliefs, yeah. Thank you so much. Palin, is there something to that?
Absolutely, absolutely. The concept of hope has been a major part of world religions, and one of their main functions is instill hope. And as our caller said, we do observe that religious belief, they do oftentimes correlate with higher hopefulness and a higher positive outlook.
And in a spiritual setting, you're often congregating with people who share a similar belief, a similar belief system, and mm-hmm. perhaps have the same type of hope.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah, exactly.
Is there something to that?
Exactly. Because, again, hope, it's an emotion, it's a cognition, and these are contagious things. And as you say, if you are surrounded with people who share that, it becomes stronger and stronger.
Is there such a thing as having too much hope? Can we focus on the good in life too much, look forward to all the good the future holds too much?
Mm-hmm. Well, that in itself might not be a problem, but what might be problematic is if you ignore legitimately negative or wrong things, and if your sense of hope is in a way divorced from reality, that's a problem. And we never of course, advocate a sense of hope or a sense of happiness that ignores the negativity, things that need to be rectified. So yes, definitely that can be problematic.
So if you're really so focused on being hopeful and optimistic that you have a blind spot for other pieces of your life that perhaps need to be addressed, and, mm-hmm. and you need to probably do something about some of those other things. But if you ignore them, that's not exactly a good thing.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah. Ignoring, avoiding, those are never good things. But there is at least some studies that show that people who are optimistic, they actually do not tend to ignore the negative stuff. They tend to be more open to information, self-relevant information, negative information, if there's something they can do about that. So we hope that the kind of optimism and hope people aspire to is one like that, being hopeful but also never ignoring the negative.
Because part of our ability to be hopeful is connected to our environment and who is around us, the time period we live in, are certain generations more hopeful, more happy than other generations?
I guess there are periods of history which were filled with more hope than others. The zeitgeist, the spirit of the times, might be filled with more excitement. And I guess we can think of maybe the 60s or the Renaissance or maybe the pioneers in the American history. Again, definitely that plays a role. And sometimes it's not the objective conditions that matter as much, but people's attitudes. So, for example, recent studies show that African youth is showing quite high levels of hope in surveys. They say that they believe that the future is going to be good for them. So maybe objectively their conditions are not that great compared to other places, but they do have that belief in the progress, in the direction where they are going, which is great.
So we see research out of Africa with youth there. What about age groups? Are we more hopeful and optimistic at a certain age in life or a certain stage in life? Like, like as we look back at grandkids, for instance.
Right. There are some studies that show that people, as they get older, they become slightly more positive in their emotions. So that might suggest that they might become more hopeful, but that's probably a small effect. I'm not aware of any study that looked at hopefulness differences, age differences in hopefulness. And it might rely more on personality.
When we look at kids, young adults, perhaps being more hopeful than people in their 20s and 30s, people in those younger adult years, they're, you know, trying to build that goal of adulthood. They're going to school and traveling, internships, part-time jobs, and kind of sorting out their lives in these fits and bursts of short segments. What can that period of moving into adulthood do to hope and your ability to have hope?
It might... I mean, because of that, all that movement, all those things that are happening, people might just go through life without thinking much about it. Hope might not even be on their minds, but they might just do the things that are necessary.
Yeah. We're talking with Palin Kesseber. She's a social psychologist. We're looking at hope in all of its dimensions this hour of the morning show. You can join in at 800-642-1234. Teenagers, are you hopeful about the future? Why or why not? And parents, do your children give you hope? Or perhaps you're you're nervous for the future they'll live in. You can share with us, do you believe our capacity for hope is genetic or defined by our environment or a combination of both? And what has helped you achieve well-being? We're at 800-642-1234. You can join in or tweet us at WPR Mornings. Palin, how is hope connected to our health and overall well-being?
Oh, yeah, that's a really important question. The link between hope and well-being is very strong, very strong. I cannot emphasize that enough. Psychological well-being definitely goes together with hope. And this is evident to us when we think about the opposite of hope, which is hopelessness, which is pretty much related to depression. What we find is hope is one of the personality traits that are most strongly related to happiness. And hope is also related to other positive qualities such as meaning and self-esteem, which make for a good life. And we see these positive connections not only between hope and psychological health, but also physical health. We do know from so many studies that a hopeful outlook, an optimistic outlook, positivity, those predict better health and even longevity. They also predict faster recovery from disease. So hope is such a desirable quality if we care about psychological and physical well-being.
Yeah, so you can see the mental and physical benefits of being hopeful.
Absolutely.
Is hope a motivating factor? Does being hopeful and being optimistic drive us to higher levels of achievement?
It does. It absolutely does, because when we are hopeful, we believe that good things can happen. And if we have that belief, it drives us towards action. So that in itself creates a very positive feedback loop between hope and action, because you believe that something good is likely. So you work for it and then it happens and then it gives you further hope. So that's one of the main reasons why hopeful people are also more successful, because they do work towards their goals with higher energy and determination.
Is a more hopeful country or community more successful then?
I think we could say that. I think we can say that, because they would be happier and they would also be more likely to engage in behaviors that are going to give themselves more success and further well-being.
We're looking at all the dimensions of hope and what it means in our life. UW-Madison social psychologist Palin Kesseber stays with us, and she studies happiness and virtue. Gathering your thoughts, they're welcome at 800-642-1234. Do you believe our capacity for hope is genetic or defined by our environment, or is it something of both? Is hope learned or innate? What has helped you achieve your well-being? You can call in, email ideas at WPR.org. We'll be back in just a minute here on the Ideas Network. We're looking at the forces of hope in our life and what happens when there isn't any to be had. This exploration of hope is part of our collaboration with WPR's national program, To the Best of Our Knowledge. And it's a series they will launch later this month. As part of the conversations on hope, they reached out to science fiction writer Victor Laval, where glimpses of hope can be seen in the literary sense of dystopia, utopia, a different world, and past the point of hope.
Hope largely means the ability to still be here fighting.
How much hope do you currently possess? Do you believe our capacity for hope is genetic or defined by our environment or both? What has helped you achieve well-being? Join in this hour-long conversation on hope at 800-642-1234. You can email ideas at WPR.org. Palin Kesseber is an assistant scientist for the Center for Healthy Minds at UW-Madison, where she studies happiness and virtue. Palin, when we think about how humans are designed, how we're put together, are we naturally hopeful creatures? Are we wired to be hopeful?
I don't think we can say that. I think we are wired to notice the things that are more likely to go wrong, and we are wired to make sure that good things happen. But I think it's much more natural to be neurotic and to worry about the future than to be fine with it, just because evolutionarily it would have helped us much more to notice like what can go wrong than what can go right. But that, of course, doesn't always help if the goal is to become more positive or more optimistic.
You've studied how our perception of death impacts our lifestyle. How does the way we view death affect our well-being and our ability to be hopeful?
Well, it all depends on how we look at death. Death can be a major source of inspiration, and it can lead us to live in accordance with our values, if we can see and accept it for what it is, if we have an accepting attitude towards that, and if we have that, then it is something that will inspire us to live a better life, to make the best of our lives. But if our attitude is more denial or having a hard time accepting its reality, ignoring it, denying it, then it's actually gonna lead to some underground anxiety that is gonna hurt us. So my personal belief, and also supported by research, is that it is much healthier to look death in the eye and have that awareness that we are going to die one day. Let that guide us.
People who have terminal illnesses, do we know where they find hope?
Yeah, they do find hope. They do find hope in thinking about what they have accomplished, their families, their lives. If they are believers, they find hope and consolation in the idea of an afterlife. And there are studies that show that there are interventions that increase hope even in people with terminal illnesses. And all these, what they do is show people that there are other ways of looking at things, like interpreting things in a slightly different way that makes it look better.
Let's go to Richard now, joining us from Appleton. Hi, Richard.
Hi. I have a question about what she thinks of somebody in much worse situations that might be incarcerated, where in fact it's probably an environment meant to, you know, crush any sense of hope.
Yeah, thank you, Richard, for this question. I cannot entirely understand that would make somebody feel hopeless. Well, but I think what would help to realize or think about is chronic disease. It's incredibly hard, but it's also part of life. It has always been. It will likely always be. Or prisons, having a loved one in prison. There are so many other people who have that, right? Having a loved one in prison. It's hard, but it's part of life. And also, you are not the only person who has that, right? What if everybody who has a loved one felt hopeless or you know, I think what's important to realize is that we are not alone in our suffering. And also, even if hope might be hard to achieve, we need to think about, okay, what is served if I collapse in hopelessness? Who does it serve? Does it serve me? Does it serve the people around me? It probably doesn't, right? So, for example, if you have a loved one in prison, what is it something that you can do that will make the situation a little better, maybe for that person or for others, right? You might maybe work for an organization that helps youth at risk of becoming, you know, criminal, for example. Or you might do things that take your sense of hopelessness and turn that into hope for others. So yes, it is hard to feel hope when the situation is dire, but that's all the more reason to aspire towards hope.
Your response reminds me of this notion that you should take action. You should do something.
Absolutely.
And that can just, the act of doing something can help with hope.
That is so true. So true. Action is oftentimes the best thing to do if you are feeling hopeless. Just have a goal, and it can be a small goal, but just walk towards it, because just sitting in passivity, it's gonna reinforce the sense of hopelessness. Whereas if you engage even a small behavior, that is gonna give you a sense of hope. And again, one of the best ways to feel hopeful ourselves is to give hope to others. And as I said, we all have the power to do that. We don't need to have a lot of things. We can just be good people. And that in itself is a huge source of hope for a lot of people.
Richard, how does that sound to you? What is your reaction?
I was actually thinking more about the person who's in prison rather than the loved one feeling hopeless about somebody in prison, because the culture there is so designed against it. Considering how much time somebody may spend in solitary confinement, I mean, I think that's a totally hopeless situation, because there's nobody to reach out for support. There's nobody to think that you can help once you're that isolated. And whatever else one has to talk about how bad prisons are and no rehabilitation and how dangerous they really are more and more just designed to suppress, you know, any human spirit and sense of hope.
Yeah, and that solitary confinement, too, when there is no one around you providing that support.
Yeah. That's inhuman, really. And again, like, what can we do then to fight against that? Maybe to work. I mean, if you are the person who is under solitary confinement, that's really, really hard, right? But yeah, for the rest of us, we can see how we can improve that situation.
Palin, you study the personality traits and the psychology of humans. You understand our flaws inside and out. What gives you hope?
Oh, great question. Almost everything, just life, you know, nature, people. I really do believe that all of us have the aspiration to be good and live good lives. And if given the opportunity, I do believe that all of us can do that. And that's what gives me hope.
Well, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you. It was such a pleasure.
Palin Kesseber is an assistant scientist with the Center for Healthy Minds at UW-Madison. She's a social psychologist studying happiness and virtue. WPR's national program, To the Best of Our Knowledge, is exploring hope in a 3-part series beginning next weekend. You can listen and learn more at ttbook.org. This is The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. You're listening to the Ideas Network.